So it's not so good. The point of this year is to give you about... It should be a total of about 7 vorts to say Ansukis. I'm putting them all together just so it becomes like one long big thing, and I'm going to tell you over 3 crazy Hashgacha Pratis stories. 3 crazy stories. All 3 of them, 2 of them are from Rabbi Kaplan, Rabbi David Kaplan. Very, very good, very, very good speaker. And I have a book that he wrote called Impact and Major Impact for a very cute little book. I think I got it for 25 shekin base. And then, there's a third story that somebody had said over at, I think it was Yarchi Kala last year at MCSY. But it's going to give you stuff to talk about. It's going to give you stuff like this. Okay, so here we go. Everyone asks why we have a chag from the Anani HaKavod for the clouds of glory when there were 2 other huge nisim that happened in the desert, the Mon and the Be'er. Now, the Anani HaKavod were there because of the schus of Aaron. The Mon was there for Moshe Rabbeinu. The Be'er was the Be'er of Miriam. All right, so we all know that. We all know the connection between those 3. The question is, what about the Mon and the Be'er? Do we have a chag representing those 2? And what happened in the Anani HaKavod? And it's strange. We make sukkahs now so that it's, you know, perfect weather for us to go outside and feel sit outside in the sukkah like it is tonight.
But
in Eretz Yisrael, 100% true. When it gets a little bit cooler and everything's perfectly fine, the question is, do we have a chag for the Mon and the Be'er, and why not? What's the pshat? So I'm going to give you 3 quick reasons. The time that Hagim says, the Mon, what was the pshat behind the Mon? It tasted like anything you wanted it to taste like. The Be'er gave you a drink, and not everybody knows this about the Be'er, but whatever you wanted to drink, you could taste out of the Be'er. I mean, it tasted like great water, not just stout water, but really, really good tasting water. So we have Basar and Yayin on Yom Tov. That's what we're supposed to do. Our meat and wine is supposed to represent the Mon and the Be'er Shel Miriam. That's what we have every Yom Tov. We have it every Yom Tov. So we do represent the Mon and the Be'er. They are represented within our Yom Tov. So that works out perfectly fine. And this is Chassidish Atara, but Chassidish Atara tells you that if you want to, you can taste the taste of Be'er Shel Miriam in the wine. If you want to, you can taste the taste of the Mon within the meat. I can't tell you that I've tasted it yet, but I haven't been Hasidish for so long. So I you'd have to like really work on that. But that's one answer. One answer is we have it. The Mon and the Be'er are there and everything's there together. Second answer is that these 2 are necessary to survive. You want to live. You cannot live in a desert without food or drink. There's nothing you can do. Where are you going to get food and drink from? You're not going to find it in the middle of the desert. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have given us the Mon and the Be'er, you just wouldn't survive. But shelter, in theory, I know it's hard because it's extremely hot during the day and extremely cold at night, but in theory a person can survive without having any shelter. If they wouldn't have had the Anani HaKavod, they would have survived. That would have been perfectly fine. But they needed the Mon and they needed the Be'er. They wouldn't have lived without those 2. Without the Anani HaKavod, they would have survived. So something that we get that's a little bit extra, it's like the topping, you know, the little bit of the dessert at the very end. So that we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for, and we say we have an extra chag, and we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you so much for giving us that. But the Talmid Hagim brings another reason. He says the Erev Rav got no hana from the Anani HaKavod. The Erev Rav did get hana from the Mon and the Be'er. They did drink from the remnants of the well of Miriam. They did have all the rest of the Mon that wasn't picked up by the rest of Bnei Yisrael. The rest of the stuff that other Bnei Yisrael did not eat, they themselves got. They got the little stuff. That was the Erev Rav. But the Anani HaKavod, they weren't allowed in. No Gerim were allowed in, aside from Yisro. And remember, Yisro had to stay outside of the Anani HaKavod and had to be invited in by Moshe Rabbeinu. He didn't know what to do. Chazal say he shot in an arrow, saying, I'm here, I have your wife and kids, you know, do you want to come out and get them? They have to shoot in. He couldn't get it. You can't just stop get into the Anani HaKavod, especially if you're not Jewish. The Arvei Nachal actually learns something you should know. The Arvei Nachal says the Anani HaKavod, you could not see them. They were impossible to see. So you had no idea. I can. Amen. Very good, very good. That's a question if you have to answer amen when you say that. Okay, all good. Anyway, so what? That's true, but that all worked for us. Okay, so now the Arvei Nachal says you couldn't see in to the Anani HaKavod, and not only could you not see in, you couldn't see them. They were invisible. So you couldn't really see where it was. Yisro just took a guess of where the Erev Rav were and said, where's Bnei Yisrael? And they're like, yeah. They just like looked around and they just sort of like motioned toward it. And then Yisro shot an arrow and then all of a sudden the arrow disappeared. No, he couldn't see anything. Couldn't see anything whatsoever. That's Arvei Nachal's Chiddush. That not only could you not see in, you couldn't see them at all. That's what Chazal said. That's an unbelievable Arvei Nachal. Okay. the Erev Rav didn't get the Ananei Kol. So that means that these clouds of glory, and I think I'm going to call it by that from now on because that's an awesome name, the clouds of glory must have been something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted special, that he wanted to keep unique for Klal Yisrael, that he didn't want to allow any other nation in the world to have. And it's true. There is no other nation in the world that has ever gotten the Ananei HaKavod. Manan Be'er, yes, the Erev Rav got. Yeah, there were other nations who got from it. The deer even drank from some of the man after it melted, after the sun melted it. The deer drank from it, and the people from Edom and Yishmael shot the deer, and they had the same taste within the deer, the venison that they had right then. There was something with the man, but the Ananei HaKavod was only Jewish. What's with the clouds? So there's a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, why we have Sukkos. Why we have Sukkos. Yud Alef Mun Beis in Gemara Sukkah. The pasuk says, Ki basukos hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael. It's a pasuk in Emor, Chav Gimel Mem Gimel. Ki basukos hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael. In Sukkos, I made dwell b'nei Yisrael. This is one border in of itself. You can say this at a Shabbos table and you're good. At a Yom Tov table and you're good. Rabbi Eliezer says, Ananei HaKavod Hayu. The Sukkos that I made them dwell in, that I put them in, were the Ananei HaKavod, the clouds of glory. I put them in the clouds of glory, said Rabbi Eliezer. But Rabbi Akiva Omer, Sukkos Mamish Asulahem. They made for themselves actual huts. And they separated themselves from everyone. Inside the clouds of glory, they each had their own hut. There was the Zimmerman hut, and the Reich hut, and the Freund hut, and everybody was going around, and everybody had their own hut. They all separated. That's what we're trying to say. So, you should just know, before we try to explain all this, the Medrash seems to have it the opposite way. Toras Kohanim, which is the Medrash on Vayikra, as well as, and seems to be in a Tosefta, it has it the exact opposite. Rabbi Eliezer says, Sukkos Mamish, and Rabbi Akiva says that it's Ananei HaKavod. But the Maariv Tzachias proves that it must be the way our Gemara says it. Why? Unkelus. Unkelus wrote his Targum on the side of the Chumash. He wrote his Targum based on the teachings of Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis and Rabbi Yoshua. Only based on them. He wrote, in the translation of this pasuk, he wrote, Bimatilius Anani, in the protection of clouds. That sounds like Rabbi Eliezer. And he learned from Rabbi Eliezer. So we prove from that, the Maariv Tzachias proves from that it must be that that's where he gets it from. That the Ananei HaKavod is really Rabbi Eliezer. And the other girsos, the other way of looking at it, switching their opinions around, is not correct. Either way, Rashi says right there on the page, he says, Basukos? What's Sukkos? He says, Ananei HaKavod. The Ramban says, it's Pashit. It's the Ananei HaKavod. In Pshat, says the Ramban, it must be the clouds of glory. But the Rashbam says, no. The Sukkos in Pshat, in simplistic, if you want to look at it, simple beyond simple, it refers to Sukkos Mamish, actual huts. And it was actual huts. Okay, so we have a machlokas, how to read the pasuk. Kiba Sukkos Hoshavti Es B'nei Yisrael, made B'nei Yisrael rest in Sukkos. What does that mean? Rabbi Eliezer says it refers to Ananei HaKavod, clouds of glory. Rabbi Akiva says Sukkos Mamish, that it's actual Sukkos, and those are what they have. Now, the Rashbam says Pashat Pshat is like Rabbi Akiva, while the Ramban and Rashi both say that it's the Ananei HaKavod, the clouds of glory. And here we go. The Aruch Lener asks in the Gemara over there in Sukkah, Yud Aleph Amud Beis. This is a big board that you can also say this over. The Aruch Lener asks, we understand Rabbi Eliezer's miracle. I mean, this is a huge miracle. You have Ananei HaKavod, clouds of glory that are surrounding you at all times, protecting you from anything, from the snakes on the bottom, from arrows being shot at you, from the sun coming down from the sky. That's a huge miracle. That you want to make a chag out of. But what are you making a chag out of Sukkos Mamish? What are you going to do for Rabbi Akiva? We made a hut. Woohoo! So therefore we're going to go ahead and we're making a chag out of it? And we're going to make our own huts in the back? I mean, what's the point? What are we trying to do with this? So here we go. He answers, you know, we can see Yad Hashem in Klal Yisrael's survival over the years. When you look through the past 500-600 years, with the Inquisitions, with the pogroms, with the Holocaust, with Tach V'Tat, with all the crazy stuff that has happened over the past 500 years, let's say. So, we can see Klal Yisrael, the Yad of Hashem, taking care of Klal Yisrael, making sure that we still have something. My daughter actually just got a book from the library. It's one of the American Girl Dolls series. I don't know if anybody knows what those are. If you have a little sister or a daughter, you'll know what it is very, very soon. They're about $150 dolls, and they come with like book sets and everything, and they come with everything. So my daughter has a doll named Kit, and they just came out with a Jewish one. I don't know if it's recent or not, but it's a Jewish girl who lived in 1914 in New York and in Manhattan, and she lives on the Lower East Side. you know, before Ramosha came along. So, you know, they're going through what things were like back then, how they're celebrating Hanukkah, is that's just how it goes. And they're going through everything. You see how life could have been for America had the Holocaust never happened. Had Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Aaron Cutler not come to America, you sort of see like where America Jewry would have gone. It just sort of wouldn't have. It just would have eventually become assimilated to the extreme. There would have been nobody saying, let's make our own yeshivas. There would have been a Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman who would have been on the streets. There would have been a Rav Scheinberg before he moved to Eretz Yisrael. There would have been people that we raised here. But even they, without Rav Moshe, without Rav Yaakov, without everybody else, it's hard to imagine what American Jewry would be like today. As a whole, you can see how Klal Yisrael has been, and it's awesome. We're unbelievable in the fact that we still keep the mitzvot. We still do everything that we can do. Well, not exactly, but we do as much as we can. Finding a shkacha pratis, where a Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at you and says, here's for you, here's for you, here's for you, that's a little bit harder to find. The fact that a Nani HaKavod surrounded all of Klal Yisrael, hashkacha klalis for everybody, that's a huge miracle, and everybody saw that. But seeing that it affected you was kind of hard to see. I mean, I know it affected all of us, but me, myself, what did I get in? What did I get out of all this? Here's the pshat. We forget sometimes. If we start something, Kadosh Baruch Hu helps us finish it off. You start a little sukkah, you build a little sukkah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it into a Nani HaKavod. You make your own hut, God will surround you with clouds of glory to make you be fully protected from anything that might happen. You're fully protected and everything's perfectly fine. Rabbi Eliezer holds the Chag is to remember what God did to us as a whole, to all the Jews. Hashkacha Klalis, for everybody altogether. Nani HaKavod. Rabbi Akiva, Sukkos Mamish. HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers that we did something. We started something. We made our own little Sukkos. And from that, what did we do from there? We created Nani HaKavod. We made our own Nani HaKavod. We brought about the Nani HaKavod. That's what Rabbi Akiva says. Got to remember the little things. You got to remember the little bits and little pieces. That's what Rabbi Akiva wants you to do. To remember that you yourself are worthy of something. You yourself got an Nani HaKavod. That's a little bit. That's more than everybody else.
No,
Vati holds there were clouds. Just the Chag that we're making was not in honor of the clouds. The Chag that we're making was because we brought the clouds. We made the clouds come. That we had our own homes, and therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, oh, I want to surround you with that Nani HaKavod. That's what we're celebrating over here.
So the clouds came because we built sukkahs?
Yes. In other words, the protection of that Nani HaKavod was going to come, even though the Nani HaKavod were there as soon as they left Mitzrayim and they were still traveling and they didn't build huts and they didn't do anything. In other words, yes, the Nani HaKavod were given as a gift first, but the Nani HaKavod didn't have to stay. The reason why they stayed, because remember, they went away during the times of the Egel Azov. The reason why they came back and the reason why they stayed with us is because we built huts. We made something. We said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we'll be okay in the desert. We're fine in the desert. They didn't run into a place that was inhabited. They were fine with building their own things. And then the Anani HaKavod came back. Then the Anani HaKavod surrounded them and said, now I'm going to surround you because you did something on your own. That's the idea of Rabbi Akiva. I'm going to tell you over three stories now. Man by the name of Mr. Goldberg was driving in Buffalo, New York. Buffalo, New York. There was too much snow. There was way too much snow on the ground, and it was snowing like crazy. It was a big blizzard, massive blizzard in the middle of New York State. And he wasn't so sure what to do. He was up, it was near Buffalo, so he realized, okay, there were buildings around. He decided, I might as well stop. He stopped right by a nursing home, and he went in, and he said, listen, can I please have a place to stay the night? I can't get anywhere. My car's all stuck in the middle of the snow, and I just really can't go anywhere. Is it possible for me to stay the night here? So the nursing home said, yeah, we have an extra bed. Go ahead. Sleep there, you'll be perfectly fine. He went and he slept in the bed. He woke up in the morning and he asked them, you know, are there any Jewish people here? He wanted to know if there was a minion. Can I get a minion together in the morning? Is there anybody Jewish here that I could maybe, you know, help to get a minion together? So he looked and the nurse said to him, there was a Jew here. His name was, let me get the name, hold on. His name was Sam Farbstein. His name was Sam Farbstein, but he died last night. Just last night, he just passed away. So the guy's like, oh, I'm so sad. So the nurse said, yeah, he has no living relatives. He has nobody else here. So we're giving him over to the state, and the state's going to bury him later on today. Now, obviously, that's not going to be a Jewish burial. So this Mr. Goldberg said, listen, he's Jewish. He's got to have a Jewish burial. So we've got to do everything we can in order to get this guy buried. So the nurse said, listen, if you want to do something, you want to take responsibility, go ahead. The guy said, Mr. Goldberg said, well, this is a Mace Mitzvah. This guy, Stan Farbstein, is a Mace Mitzvah. So he decided, okay, fine, I'll go ahead. He calls up the Chevra Kedisha in Buffalo or somewhere near Buffalo. I don't know where exactly it was. Chevra Kedisha said it's going to cost $14,500 to bury the guy. Now, this guy, Mr. Goldberg, he wasn't a rich Jew. He said, $14,000? Like, that's a lot of money. Like, I'll do as much as I can, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay $14,000. So the Chevra Kedisha got together to discuss what they can do for this guy. So one of them snapped it. He realized that, oh, that's right. We had a donation years ago, just in case it was like 15, 20 years ago, in case there was a Mace Mitzvah, specifically, there would be a Mace Mitzvah in this, in Buffalo, that we should take care of it with this money. And they got the money together. They realized, okay, they put it together. It was $20,000. $20,000 altogether that was there for a Mace Mitzvah. They said, beautiful, we have Joe, we have enough, we have more than enough. They took $15,000 out of it. They took Sam Farbstein. They went and they buried him. One of the Chevra Kedisha members went to the ledgers to go figure out who donated the money 15 years ago. It was Sam Farbstein. Sam Farbstein. When you start something, Kadosh Baruch Hu makes sure it gets finished off. That's the idea of the Sukkos Mamish. I'm telling you another one. An NTS wire told a Rav who came to Chicago, he was in the army in the West Bank. He told him specifically, he knows, he spoke to the guy personally, the guy who this happened to. And so you're going to get third hand from me. I got it second hand from this Rav. He lives in Eretz Yisrael. He came in, he said the following. He said he was stationed in a building in the middle of the West Bank. And the deal was like this. He had to look out the window to see if there were any terrorists going through the streets, if there was anybody, any weaponry or anything else going on. His job was basically to look out a window for 8 hours a day. 8 hours a day, just look outside. And it was deadly, because they lined it up with sandbags, so if anybody shot, you know, it would be very, very hard to be able to shoot inside that tiny little area. You know, it's a tiny little area where you looked out. But it was boring, as you can imagine, as anything you can imagine. It was beyond boring. I mean, they had to do it for 8 hours a day, and he wasn't allowed to move. He had to do it. He had to sit there. After about 6 hours into it, he said to one of the other guys that was there, he said, pass me a Tehillim. He's not allowed to get up from his seat. So he said, pass me a Tehillim. I got to read something. I got to do something. So the guy said, you can't, you got to be looking outside. He said, nothing's been happening. It's in the middle of the day. Everybody's doing, you know, everybody's resting right now. Just pass me the Tehillim. So the other guy gets up. He gives him the Tehillim. He's reading the Tehillim by the window. And he sits there for maybe 5-10 minutes reading Tehillim. As soon as he finishes, closes the book, kisses it, gets up, and walks over to go put the Tehillim back where he got it from, where the guy got it from. The other guy sitting in the room says, what are you doing? What are you getting up for? As he's about to answer, he's like, oh my gosh. All of a sudden, a huge, a missile, a bomb, or whatever it was, blew apart the sandbags. It was right in front of the window. Blew everything apart. They hit the deck. They went for cover. They started shooting in. There was shooting straight inside. Both of them survived. Both of them were perfectly fine. Had he been sitting there, he would have been killed. Had he been sitting there, he would have been killed. For those 5 little seconds, for that one little thing that ended up happening over there. Got another one. This is by far the craziest story I've read in a very, very long time. Chaim Heller. Chaim Heller was in a terrible accident in a factory. He was a factory worker in Europe before World War II. Before World War II. He was in a terrible accident. His hand was mangled. They needed to do a skin graft, and they took skin and put it on to his hand in order to, you know, to redo his palm and to make it all better. So, eventually, he lived in Lodz at this time. The Lodz ghetto had been made, and the Nazis were in charge, and he was in the ghetto. He wasn't able to really get out. So, one day, his sister Nechama was taken by the Nazis. It was when Chaim wasn't there. And when Chaim came back and he heard that his sister was taken, he was just beyond, he was out of control. He went straight to the Nazi headquarters and he demanded, I want my sister back. So the Nazi said, she's a Jewish dog. A Jewish dog, that's what he told him. He said, I'll give you your sister back when hair grows on the palm of your hand. So Chaim Heller opened up his hand and showed him his hand. He had hair from the skin graft. The skin graft was taken from his leg. And the hair that was taken, the hair that was on the leg was taken along with that skin in order to put on his hand. So he had hair in the palm of his hand. How many lines could this Nazi have said? How many lines could this Nazi have said? The Nazi saw it. He screamed out loud, you're a satanic Jew. And he gave him back his sister. Take your sister, you Satan Jew. That's what he called him. Well, my sister, he got his sister back. Crazy, unbelievable things where you just start, you do something, something happens, then all of a sudden there's a whole thing at the very, very end, at the very end of the day. There's another story that I always said I wasn't allowed to say, but maybe I'll say it afterward, but another story altogether. We said before that the Rashi and Ramban argue with the Rashbam in Pshat and the Pasuk. What does Kiba Sukkos Oshatiyas Bnei Yisrael mean? Does it mean Sukkos Mamish? Does it mean that they sat in huts in the desert? Or does it mean that they had the Anani HaKavod? What's the Machlokas? The funny thing is, the tour. Why would he get involved in this machlokas? In Tuf Reish Chaf Hey, the first siman in Sukkos says the following: the Sukkos she'omer ha'kasuk she'oshavti b'hem, the Sukkos that the pasuk says that I made Bnei Yisrael dwell in them, him anani kavodo, they're the anani kavod, she'kifanu b'hem leval yakov son rishar v'shemesh, that surrounded us, that we wouldn't be hit by the sun and by the heat or by anything like that. What in the world is that? Why is the tour getting involved in this machlokas? Is there a halachic nafkamina if it's the anani kavod or Sukkos mamish? What difference does it make? The Torah doesn't have to get involved. Just say, why do we have Sukkos? Because there's a machlokas. Some say because of Sukkos mamish. Some say because of the Anani HaKavod. But the Torah is getting involved. He says, no, it's Sukkos mamish. I'm telling you, it's Sukkos mamish. Well, what in the world is the Torah getting involved for? What does the Torah want with all that? Okay. Now, we're going to answer this all up. Reb Wolfson quotes a Rokeach. The Rokeach says, you know what Sukkos mamish meant? They made huts when they went out to go fight Sihon and Og. When they went to go fight Sihon and Og, the two huge giants on the other side of the Arden River, Bnei Yisrael went out to go fight them and made sukkos, huts for themselves, the Rokeach, from Reb Wolfson. So they made huts for themselves. And they won the war. They beat Sihon and Og, as we know. Moshe Rabbeinu jumped up the 30 amos altogether and was able to knock down the ankle of Og, and Og fell to the ground. And then Sihon came along. Sihon wasn't as strong, but Moshe Rabbeinu again killed Sihon, and Sihon and his son, Og and his son. They defeated both those armies. And the reason we have Sukkos, says the Rokeach, is because we won those wars. And because we sat in huts while we won those wars, the memory of that war is our Chag of Sukkos. Interesting, no? You never heard that before. That's not something that people say over. I mean, it's not like the Gemara. The Gemara says, Sukkos mamish aran nanei akavod. But the Rokeach is saying, this is Pshat and Rabbi Akiva. Not like we said, not like what we said before, that it's Hashkacha Pratis. They were trying to look at each individual and say what we got ourselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The nanei akavod came because of me. But rather, what's Pshat? The Pshat is because we fought a war. We won the war, and it was while we were sitting in Sukkos, we remind ourselves about the war by making Sukkos similar to Hanukkah. We lit the menorah, so we light the menorah to remind ourselves that we won the war. That's what it seems to be. That's what it seems to be. That's what seems to be involved over here.
When did they say in Sukkos in the war?
It doesn't say in the Pasuk. The Rokeach says that's what they did when they fought against Sihon and Og. And it's very strange. Why would you make a Sukkah? Who makes a Sukkah? I mean, a bunker, maybe, underground, you know, like, cover it up a little bit. Like, can you imagine, you're going up against Sihon and Og, the guy has a huge mountain over his head, 3 parsos long that he wants to throw on Klal Yisrael, and you're sitting there, and you're just like, let's make a hut. That's going to work. Like, put up 2 sticks, and like, have a little grass, and, you know, take some branches, and put it on top, and like, now we're protected, now we're fine, nothing can hit me here. Like, who puts up a hut in the middle of a war? You're fighting against Sihon and Og, and you're fighting against huge giants, they can step on the hut. They're going to step on it, and think it's a little bush. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. Why would they go ahead and do that? What's the shot behind that?
Protection against the enemy only for protection against the elements?
No, absolutely not. No, clearly, they're fighting an enemy. No. They're dangerous. They're so flimsy. What's going on? What do we say every Friday night? We add it on to Ashkivanyal. Haporeis sukas shalom aleinu v'alkom Yisrael v'al Yerushalayim. It's part of the bracha. He spreads out a sukkah of peace over us and on all of Yerushalayim. That's what he ends up doing. What's the pshat? The pashat pshat is like this. The Anani HaKavod were a zecher for Aaron. Aaron. What's Aaron known for? His ability to make peace. He made shalom between everybody. The sukkah came, the Anani HaKavod came because of Aaron. There's more to it. The Anani HaKavod protected Bnei Yisrael from all the different arrows and the what's the word? I can't think of the word. The little catapults. What? Boulders? Like bludgeon? Cannonballs. It's like, okay, whatever it is. I was thinking of bludgeons, and I know that's not the word with a D and a G in there. That's a big word. Either way, and an E-O. Yeah, that's right. Oh, you got that one. I was thinking of that word, and I don't know why. That came into my head. But I don't know enough English. So either way, you know, it's my second language. So either way, so whatever it was, everything that the Mitzrayim catapulted against them, everything the Mitzrayim shot against them, then another couple stopped them. Then in a kavod protected Bnei Yisrael from everything. The only time that an arrow got through was by Yisro. That already, there's a nice little rabbinic b'chai on that. But regardless, the Ananei kavod did not allow anything to happen. The Ananei kavod protected you. But when you go to war, you go out into the fields. You have to leave the Ananei kavod. So what are they going to do? I mean, it's great to fight from inside the Ananei kavod. You know, stand inside the Ananei kavod and just like stick your tongue out at Og and Sichon, but you're not going to win the war that way. You got to go out there. So what are you going to do? This is the most unbelievable part. Said Rav Wolfson, they made Sukkos. They extended the Ananei kavod to where they were. It doesn't mean necessarily that they literally made huts. The Sukkos mamish that they made was an extension of where they were. They took the protection of the Ananei HaKavod and brought it with them wherever they went. Wherever they went, they were surrounded by the Ananei. It was Ki'ilu they were surrounded by the Ananei HaKavod. It's like us nowadays. When you go from a sukkah, are you allowed to go to shul? I mean, the chiyuv is, you have to sit in a sukkah for 7 days. So are you allowed to go to shul? Are you allowed to go out to do mitzvahs? Are you allowed to go out to yulim? The answer is yes. But why? Because when you leave the sukkah, you have the protection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects you. If you're leaving for the right reasons, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll spread out my sukkah, that sukkah shalom, I'll spread it out to wherever you go. You want to go this way? You want to go to shul? It'll be in shul. You want to go in the car on the way there? It's on your car on the way there. You want to go on a tiyul? You want to go on a trip somewhere? If you're doing it for the right reasons, then there's no problem. I don't know if it extends to work. That'd be an interesting call for work during Chol HaMoed, because you're not supposed to work during Chol HaMoed, but the work that we do isn't really work anymore. So I don't know what we do. I have absolutely no idea. It's not like anybody's going out to be a tailor during Chol HaMoed. You're going out and you're on a computer. You know, I don't know if work necessarily goes into the same category as what it was back then. I have absolutely no idea. But if you're doing it for the right reasons, in order to, you know, to give yourself peace of mind or whatever it is, it's an extension of the Ananei HaKavod. You extended the Ananei HaKavod out. When Bnei Yisrael left to go fight Sichon and Og, they're celebrating the fact that they could bring the Ananei HaKavod with them. They could bring it with them. That Sukkot Shalom that they had, where there was only peace. Nothing bad would happen. Nothing bad could happen at any time. They extended it out to wherever they were. That's the real zecher. That's what we're remembering when it's Sukkos Mamish. The first shot that we gave, the Aruch Lener, that's one answer. That's one shot behind it. That is Hashkacha Pratis as opposed to Hashkacha Klolis. Is it all a Klaisa or each person individually deserve to get their own Ananei HaKavod? Here, it's the fact that we can extend the Ananei HaKavod outside of where we normally go. We can bring the Ananei HaKavod everywhere with us. During Sukkos, you are protected. You have Aaron with you everywhere. You have Shalom with you everywhere. You don't have to worry about anything. If you do it for the right reason, you do it in the right way, there's nothing to worry about. That answers the tour. Everybody agrees to Ananei HaKavod. It's a question of how you get to the Ananei HaKavod. Rabbi Yehuda says the Ananei HaKavod Mamish. While Rabbi Akiva says, no. It's the fact that you can extend, you can bring it out. That's what we're celebrating over here. The fact that you can bring it out with you wherever you went. Now, you got to take it a little bit further. What did Yonah do, the first thing he did when he left the city of Nineveh? Haftorah of Yom Kippur. The tree was made for him. First thing he did was he made a sukkah. Isn't that strange? Isn't it weird that we read it on Yom Kippur, Motzi Yom Kippur? What are you supposed to do? This Minchat Yom Kippur. It's almost Motzi Yom Kippur. What are you supposed to do? The first thing, Motzi Yom Kippur, you're supposed to build a sukkah. What's pshat? What is Yonah doing? Yonah was scared out of his mind. You know what he's scared of? Because although the people in Nineveh did tshuva, there were a lot of people in Nineveh who started screaming at Yonah, where's your prophecy now, Navi boy? Where is it? You said we're going to be destroyed. When are we going to be destroyed? And Yonah got angry because he knew this was going to happen. He knew there was going to be a Chilul Hashem. He said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yeah, most of the city did tshuva, but there's a ton of Rishayim here. And these people are going to hurt the Jews later on. And for these people, you're letting these people live? He knew it was going to happen. And as soon as his nevuah wasn't fulfilled, because they did tshuva and they changed their ways, and Paro, who was the king of the nation, made sure that everybody changed, not everybody listened. Everybody looked at him and said, oh yeah, and now what? Yeah, oh, we see. I'm sure. You're a real Navi. You're a real Navi. You Jews. Always the Jews. So what did he do? He ran out and he was afraid that they were going to do something to him. You're a false prophet. They're going to kill him. So what did he do? He built a sukkah. He built a sukkah. That's when the kikayon grew. That's when he had that little kikayon tree grew, the eucalyptus or whatever it was. I don't know, I have no idea what the kikayon is. But the kikayon tree grew, and that's when it was destroyed afterward. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know, the kikayon should live. You don't think I could let anything else? Just stop. That's what ended up happening. such an unbelievable thing. The first thing he did was build a sukkah, because he understood that the concept of a sukkah is protection. It's sukkah shalom. That's the idea behind it. If we knew what it meant, you wouldn't leave the sukkah all 7 days of Sukkot. 7 days, I'm not including Shemini Atzeret Simchas Torah. You wouldn't leave. You would stay there the entire time. You wouldn't be able to leave. You'd sit there and you'd be like, why would I leave? I am automatically protected here. It's unfortunate that we have rain. It's unfortunate that we're not going to be able to sit in our sukkah, that it's raining all week next week, except what, Tuesday, Wednesday? Wednesday, Thursday. It's supposed to rain all week until Wednesday. And then next weekend also, next Shabbat Sunday, next Yom Tov, well, it doesn't really matter by then. It's such an unbelievable thing that we have such a concept of automatic protection, protexio. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting there saying, nothing will happen to you. Now, last year, I slept in the sukkah every year. Last year was a little bit hard. It rained one night and then whatever. But I had an unbelievable thing happen to me. I think of it in the bad way, and I tell it over in like a bad way as opposed to the good way. I went into the sukkah, third night of sukkahs. I put out my bed. I have a little fold-up cot. I put out my bed, set it all up and everything, put my pillow down, put my blanket down, and then I heard a rustling in the corner. So I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, what is that? I'm like thinking rat. It wasn't. It was a skunk. I was there for about 5 minutes, working on my bed, taking care of everything. The skunk was in the sukkah the whole time, and it didn't spray me. Not only did it not spray me, it didn't spray the sukkah. It didn't spray the sukkah, even though I was sitting there with it the whole time. So I screamed like a little girl, and then I ran inside. You know, I ran inside. I waited for it to leave. So I waited out there. I sat in a rocking chair. I'm like watching it go. I wish I had my shotgun. That would have been great. But I'm like sitting there the whole time waiting for it to go, and finally it does go. Does God believe? You know what? I think it was Yom Tov night. I think that's the reason why I couldn't turn on the lights and get it out. Can't remember exactly what happened.
I couldn't get my shotgun.
What? I think it's illegal to shoot a skunk, if I remember correctly. It's illegal in Chicago to kill a skunk and to trap them and to have them as pets. I think those are the three. Yeah, and you want to kill them all. Anyway, they're all God's creatures. Just a really strange one. So I waited for it to go, so it went out. It left. It left the sukkah. And I'm like, I go outside, and I'm like, all right, it's gone. I smell the sukkah. It smells okay. The skunk didn't go in, you know, it didn't do anything, so I'm very happy. I set up the bed again. I put myself all out there. About to go to sleep, the skunk comes back. I only saw the tail. I banged on the door of the sukkah. Skunk ran out. I took my stuff. I was like, I'm done for the night. I am absolutely done. I'm not going back to this. There's one spot in the sukkah where it could come under, and it was right under one of the one. Oh my gosh. I've never been more scared in my life. But you think about it. That is a sukkah shalom. How in the world did it not spray me? I banged on the door. I mean, skunks get scared. They spray. But it didn't spray me. It's one of the strangest things, and I don't think about it that way. I think about it as, hear about the skunk? Like, that's what I think of. And I think of it in a bad way. But Lamaisa, it's a good thing. Lamaisa, I never got hit. On Shabbos Chol Hamoed Sukkot, does anybody know what the Haftorah is? Haftorah is a crazy one.
Gog and Magog.
Gog and Magog. Very good, Kent. Gog and Magog, the last war before Mashiach. Gog and Magog. Rav Haigon says it'll happen in Tishrei. It'll happen in Tishrei. So we read it right now. What's the connection? Obviously, there's a connection between these two. The war against Gog and Magog is not like any other war that we've ever had, except for one. All the wars that we fought, the Romans, the Babylonians, let's call Romans Edom, Yavon, the Greeks, Madai and Paras, Mitzrayim, all of them, they didn't hate us, per se. They hated, you know, they were jealous of us. They knew that we were a chosen nation. They knew that we were special. They knew we had something that they didn't. I mean, Yosef did all that stuff in Mitzrayim. He was there for like 10 days and became the richest man ever. It's classic, you know? I mean, it's just like, they're jealous. They're jealous. They get jealous and then that's it. Gog and Magog, it's after Mashiach comes. There will be a Mashiach ben Yosef. And then Gog and Magog come up and kill Mashiach ben Yosef. There's a whole big thing that they might not. Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah in Parshas Korach is to make sure that Gog and Magog don't destroy Mashiach ben Yosef. I don't know if he was answered yet. We'll find out. But Lamaisa, Mashiach ben Yosef comes and Gog and Magog come up and they say, we don't want God. We don't want God. Gog is the leader of the nation. Magog is the nation. It's not Gog versus Magog, like some people think. It's Gog and Magog, his nation. They get up and say, we don't want God. We have nothing to do with God. We want to go up completely against them and destroy everything that you guys stand for. And Gog and Magog stand up and they try to destroy us. And they kill Mashiach. Hopefully not. But they kill Mashiach. They go up against us. They go up against us and they try to destroy us. This is not like any war that we've ever fought. It's just a different type of a war. Sheni Shmuel says, Sukkis is the Chag of Aaron. Aaron stands for the guy in the middle. The guy who stands for peace. Aaron is He, Resh, and Nun. All of them are the middle letters of the respective numbers. Out of tens, 1 through 10, the middle number is 5. That's a He. 10 through 100, the middle number is 50. That's a Nun. To, we only have 100 to 400, because we only go up to Tuf, the middle letter is a Resh. That's 200 altogether. So you have all those, and all with an Aleph. The Aleph at the beginning to stand for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To say he's doing everything L'Shem Shemayim. He's right in the middle. He's right there, right inside the middle. That's what Aaron stands for, that he's always in the middle. He's always trying to make peace between one guy and the next guy. Between one and the next, and trying to do everything together. They're all about, he's all about peace. Dafka, this time we have Sukkis. To fight against the Gog and Magog. And who knows? Maybe the pshat is that Gog and Magog won't destroy us, or will be saved, and the peace will come to us on Sukkis. Because we have the Nanei HaKavod. We have the Nanei HaKavod surrounding us. And when you have the Nanei HaKavod, we can beat Og and Sichon. We can beat Og and Sichon. We can for sure beat Gog and Magog. There should be no problem against it. And that's the pshat on the Rokeach. That it started off that way. But that protection that we got from those Sukkos, from the Nanei HaKavod, will extend out to when we have Gog and Magog, and there won't be any problems whatsoever. It'll be an awesome time. I don't know how it's going to happen. It's going to be awesome. Sitting in a sukkah and the bomb's not hitting? I have no idea. Listen, I know that during the when they fought in the 67 war, the Yom Kippur war, so sukkahs was during those days, nobody allowed them to sit inside sukkahs. Nobody allowed them. And it was dangerous. Absolutely dangerous. How could you sit inside? You can't speculate on things like this. And the Gedolim, again, it's Gedolim that are doing these things. If Gedolim would sit inside a sukkah, maybe they wouldn't have been hit. Maybe they would have been protected. We all know the famous story of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and the famous Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir, who was sitting in one of the bomb shelters, one of the niklats, and a lady called out and said, yeah, I've been in a gunner for so long, and I do it all for this, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how could you do this to your children? Like, if I'm able to live with my life, how could you not deal with the sins that Bnei Yisrael had? And a bomb went off right on top of that niklat, and it didn't go off. And Chaim Shmulevitz said it was all due to that woman. Yes, listen, we're dealing with people that are unbelievably special people. Maybe there's not, but let's do one more thing. There's another thought.
Off that in Sukkot, that would have been the Mashiach.
Yeah, you can't speculate on things like that. But regardless, there's something there. Sukkot is mentioned one other time in the Torah. Anybody know?
Is
it? No.
They went to
No. Sukkos is a city.
Oh, right.
But before that, it's mentioned in Bereishis. There's a mention of Sukkos. Anybody remember where it is?
Yaakov
Nasa Sukkos. Awesome. Very, very good. Very, very good. The Yaakov Nasa Sukkos, after meeting with Esav, he traveled to Sukkos. Now listen to what it says. Vayiven lo bayis. He built for himself a house. Ulamikmehu also Sukkos. And for his cattle, he made Sukkos. What's pshat behind that? There is a Sheni Shmuel. This requires further inspection. This is a huge line in the Torah. It's not just stomp. He went to a place called Sukkahs and he made Sukkahs. He's like, oh, it fits the name. That's not pshat. That's not what it is. So what is it? What are we referring to over here? What did Yaakov need in making Sukkahs? It's specifically for his cattle. Not for him. For his cattle. For his, call it his sheep. Okay, what's pshat? The Zohar tells us, Yaakov took the brachas from Esav on Rosh Hashanah. There's an argument, Pirkei Rabbi Elazar says it was Pesach. The Zohar says it was on Rosh Hashanah. Yaakov's gift, where he gave the gift over to Esav, he gave the sheep and the cows and the camels and all those things when he came back from Lavan, that was on Yom Kippur. When he made the sukkahs, that was on Sukkos. Works out well. Works out really, really well. But still, he didn't make it for himself. He made it for his cattle, for his sheep. So what's going on here? Yaakov wasn't afraid of himself. He wasn't afraid for himself. Kadosh Baruch Hu told him not to worry. Al tira. You don't have to worry, Yaakov, So he's not worried about that. He wasn't worried about himself. What was he worried about? The future doros. All the future generations. What was going to happen to the future of Klal Yisrael? Yaakov had 600,000 sheep. 600,000 sheep stood for the 600,000 Jews in Klal Yisrael. You want to ask about the sheep that he gave over? wait and ask it, because that's an awesome question that's answered up at many different places by many, many different people. Those are the neshamas that we lost to the other nations. There are 600,000 sheep to Yaakovim. 600,000 sheep represented each one of the neshamas of Klal Yisrael. Those are the sheep that he took away from Lavan. Listen to this. The Yismach Moshe, famous Rav, he said he remembers when he was a sheep and used to show a mark that he had, a birthmark, that he said was from the staff of Yaakov Avinu. He said, this is from the mata of Yaakov Avinu when he hit me. The Apter Rebbe used to sing a certain niggun at certain times during the year. And he said, this is one of the songs that I heard from Yaakov Avinu when he was shepherding the sheep and making up Tehillim. Yaakov wrote part of Tehillim. This is one of the songs. He remembered the song that was out there. Unbelievable. Can you imagine somebody saying that? Forget about it. Stop. Can you imagine getting up and saying that? Getting up and saying that. Just say, God, aside from the guts that you have, say, like, I remember when I was a sheep. Like, aside from that, say, like, here's the mark. This is the mark. This is when he hit me in the shoulder. Oh, man, it hurts. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You don't just stop say things like that. You don't just stop say that. Unbelievable. For those neshamos, Yaakov was worried out of his mind. What would be with those neshamos? Would they be affected by the tumah of Esav? Would they be affected by Esav? What was Esav the man of? Esav was an ish sadeh. Where do we make our sukkahs? Outside in the fields. We go into the fields and we make sukkahs and we protect ourselves from it. We bring about the Anani HaKavod to take ourselves away from the tumah of Esav. Take ourselves away from the problems that Esav gives us. We make ourselves kadosh. There are issues out there in this world of ours. This world stinks. It stinks. You can't go more than 10 feet without seeing Arias. In any way, shape, or form. You can't go more than 10 feet. There's nothing you can do. You can't go shopping. You can't get quick milk from... whoever put up those black things in 7-Eleven, that person is my hero. He's my absolute hero. The person who put up those things so you can't see any of the magazines, oh my gosh, I couldn't ask for anything more. It's impossible. I used to walk inside there, turning to the right side, running into people on the left. You can't. You feel like an idiot. You feel like an absolute idiot. I used to walk in, go all the way to the right, go to the drink section, and then go to the Slurpees in the back. You just can't walk there. It was ridiculous. There's places in Jewel. There's certain places in Jewel where they have the black things up there. Like, you know, because Jews always use self-checkout. Because they don't trust anyone else with their food. I understand that. That's where it's all blacked out. You know, the other places where, like, there's tons of people, man, it's all showing. You just have to walk around it. There's nothing you can do. This place is so full of tumah. And I'm not just saying this place is in America. Everywhere is. The entire world is. Everything is gone. It's not like you can step a foot in Tel Aviv and not have to worry about it. I still remember going to the mall in Tel Aviv once. You just get off on the wrong floor, you're mamish in Gehenna. That's where you are. You never knew it was right there. You're on the wrong floor. You took an elevator down to the first floor, or no, to zeroth floor instead of one. And you're just like, where am I? What happened here? I can't believe this is here. It's just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. The tumah is everywhere. You want to protect yourself? Stay in the sukkah. Get yourself protected. You do a little bit, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will finish it off. That's Ashkacha Klalis and Ashkacha Pratis. Kadosh Baruch Hu will finish it off for you. He will give you those Anani HaKavod, the Pori Sukkah Shalom Aleinu. You'll get Aaron on your side. It's what we need to have that Shalom around us. Now more than ever. I can't tell you, if we can make one huge Sukkah over Eretz Yisrael, so Ahmadinejad, and everything else that he's trying to do would just be totally knocked out. And so what else could he ask for? What else could he ask for? Spend as much time as you can in Sukkah. It's time to spend as much time as you can. All right, we are going to end with that.